Chapter 10. Muted light from the setting sun streamed into the library through its west-facing windows, making the book-lined walls look almost as rusty as the folded songbird in Cianne's hands. Her footsteps sounded especially loud to her ears, and the creaking of the library doors as she closed them threatened to give her away. "Not give me away," she reminded herself. She hadn't done anything wrong. Yet. Her eyes scanned the tall set of drawers, which were bound to contain maps, but the ones hanging on the walls would be the true prize. On the left side of the library door hung a world map with several red pins marking cities in the eastern United States. The wall to the right of the doors displayed a large map of Great Britain, free of pins, save for a yellow one marking Edinburgh, Scotland. England stood almost as tall as Cianne herself. Perfect. She cupped the red songbird in her hands and approached the map.
"Can you tell me where you saw whatever it is you saw?" she asked.
The spell hopped weakly in her hands. Pressing her lips together, Cianne eyed the map and the tacks that held it in place on the wall. The bird was too weak to float on its own for long. She set down the songbird on the drawers and grabbed one side of the map, freeing several tacks. She did the same on the other side until the wide, thick paper tumbled to the floor. She laid it out flat and set the songbird atop it.
"Show me," she pressed.
The weak spell hopped once in place, then teetered onto one of its damaged wings. Cianne set it upright. It hopped down, moving toward London, before it tumbled over a second time. Cianne righted it again. The bird made its way to Reading in Berkshire and stopped. Cianne scooped the spell into her cold hands and leaned in close to the map, pushing the tip of her right index finger into the circle marking Reading.
"So close," she whispered.
The words sent goose flesh coursing down her arms. Her spine turned rigid. But had the bird seen Saraj himself? Perhaps it had simply found another Indian community, or some foreigner matching Saraj's description. This might be another wild goose chase. Of course, the bird could have located a different clue entirely.
"Thank you,"
she told the songbird as she drew back from the map. "Cease." The animation flew out of the crinkled spell, putting the worn bird at rest. She sat back on her heels, still cradling the bird. Reading. Could it be? She had to know. She had to see for herself. A large part of her wished desperately that the bird was mistaken, that a simple paper spell couldn't have found anything of use. Emery would tell me if there were any important updates, she thought, and surely Magician Hughes would tell him. She glanced to the bird in her hands. Setting it down once more, Cianne used her necklace to become a smelter, using target and launch commands on the tacks to return the map to its proper position on the wall. Returning to paper magic, she hurried from the library, winding her way back to her bedroom. The two rooms were spaced far enough apart that her lungs gasped for air by the time she reached her destination. She set the songbird on the breakfast table and hurried to the window, checking its sill for further messages. Nothing. She opened the pane and stuck her head outside, searching the air and grounds in the dimming light. Seeing no sign of an incoming message, she sucked in a deep breath and stepped away from the window, leaving it open. She paced to the table and back.
"So close," she thought, rubbing chills from her shoulders.
She should send a message to her parents, alert them.
But she didn't know for sure.
She couldn't until she went to Reading, explored it with her own eyes.
"You have no reason to go after him.
Promise me you won't."
Cianne chewed her lower lip.
"But I'm not going after him," she murmured to herself. "I'm only looking."
Her gut twisted, tight as a wrung rag, and her heart started to grow heavy. She glanced to the window again. Still nothing. She should write him.
And say what?
She wondered, stretching back to relieve the twisting and weighing.
Nothing that wouldn't get her into trouble, one way or another. And her nerves frayed too much for her to forge a cheery note. She paced to the window and back, window and back, ignoring the way Fennel's eyeless face noiselessly followed her. Reading. She could try and find a mirror, but the one in the lavatory next door was too small to fit through, and what if she missed the mark again and ended up somewhere outside Reading, alone and at night? Could she just transport from mirror to mirror until she got where she wanted, depending on luck to protect her from getting trapped in the purgatory between tarnished looking glasses? She could summon a buggy at first light, but how much would it cost to hire a buggy to Reading? Would the train be faster? Would Magician Bailey let her go? He might be happy to see the back of her, but she didn't want to antagonize him any more than she already had. Cianne knit her fingers together and continued pacing. If she left now, she'd have the cover of darkness. Saraj would share that advantage, of course, but Cianne could handle that. Besides, if she were either a gaffer or a pyre, she could create light with the snap of her fingers. The cover of night would also help conceal her bond-breaking talent from others, bystanders, policemen, even criminal affairs itself. If others learned of it, they might not be as withholding with the information as Cianne was. "And what will you do if you find him, Cianne?" she wondered. "Will you kill him?" Her breath hitched. She worried her lip. She'd killed Graf, yes, and didn't regret doing so. He'd murdered Delilah. He would have killed her and Magician Avioski, too, if given the chance. But did she really want to take a second life? Perhaps she could just maim Saraj, hurt him enough so he couldn't fight back. But no, she couldn't allow him another chance at escape. He had already been tried and convicted. Besides, he was supposed to be dead. Breathing in, Cianne filled her lungs until they threatened to burst, then let the air out all at once. If she found Saraj, if they had a confrontation, she wouldn't hold back. She couldn't afford to. He was undeserving of mercy. But there was still the issue of getting to Reading. She could risk the mirrors again, but Cianne worried her luck with using non-gaffered glass was wearing thin. A buggy might not come out this late, not without extra fees, and her next stipend payment was a week away. Still, it would be worth it, no? It would.
"Magician Bailey has his own Mercedes, and sometimes he lets me take it out."
"Bennett," she whispered. He could drive her to the train station now. She'd save on time, as well as a few pounds. And if she used the new enchanted smelter rails installed at the Central London Railway, she could be in Reading before midnight. "Do you really want to involve another person in this?" asked the voice in the back of her mind. Could Bennett end up traveling the same road as Anise and Delilah? Was she destined to leave a path of devastation behind her? "I won't let him come with me," she told herself. "A drop-off on the train station, and that's it. After that, I won't lean on Bennett for anything. Perhaps a touch of flirtation would help convince him." Seizing a gray square of paper, Cianne scribbled across its surface and folded it into a simple glider, which she directed to the window below hers. She watched until Bennett's window opened and his hand guided the glider into his room.
"The park will have to wait. Can you take me to the CLR? It's vitally important and would mean the world to me. Best to leave Magician Bailey to his rest. Secrets make friendship fonder, no?"
Turning from the window, Cianne opened her ledger with her free hand and flipped to her notes on Saraj, despite having memorized the words verbatim. She'd written both Delilah's and Anise's names in the corner and traced them over and over again until the letters were so thick the names were barely legible. Her conversation with Magician Avioski played through her mind. She mulled over that piece of brown glass stowed away in her purse. Cianne realized she had found a gold coin in the murky sewage of her situation with Magician Bailey, a sort of freedom she would never have back at the cottage. Emery wasn't here. She needn't worry about hiding secrets or bending promises so long as she resided in this empty mansion so far from her dear tutor, and no one, not even Magician Bailey, supervised her time. She cradled the red songbird against her chest. Yes, so long as she resided with the petulant folder, she could, and would, continue her pursuit of Sarraj. Enchanted lamps and fireworkings kept the CLR aglow as Bennett, his hands sweaty, white, and gripping the steering wheel of his tutor's car, pulled into the exact same parking spot Cianne had sat in nearly 2 years ago with Emery, before the paper magician had taken off to battle Sarraj. Oddly, it was also the same place where he had first kissed her. Cianne didn't mention this to her comrade, of course.
"I don't know what he'll do if I'm caught," Bennett wheezed, "but I don't think it'll be good."
"You'll be fine," Cianne assured him. She squeezed his shoulder. "Thank you. I'll be back before too long. Don't wait up."
"Are you sure? I can come with you. Help you with whatever it is that needs doing. You shouldn't go alone, Cianne. A woman out alone in the dark."
"I have to. No one else will get hurt if I'm alone." She smiled.
"Unless someone robs the train, I'll be fine. You wouldn't be much good in a robbery like that anyway. Besides, you have Magician Bailey to worry about."
Bennett swallowed, looking sallow and ill.
"What should I say if he asks?"
"Nothing," Cianne replied, slinging her bag over her shoulder. It pulled with the extra weight of her Tatham percussion lock pistol, which she'd stowed in the very bottom, just in case. "I left an illusion in my room of me sleeping, if he bothers to check."
"He'll be able to tell."
"Only if he's looking closely," she countered.
"Be safe." Bennett nodded.
"Best hurry, and then you can give me the details of why you need to be at the CLR so late at night. You can trust me, Cianne."
Cianne made no promises, merely let herself out of the vehicle and strode to the station, where she purchased a ticket and boarded the last train for Reading. Only three other people rode in the car with her. Cianne fiddled with her charm necklace as the train sped west, its wide wheels practically floating over the smelter-enchanted rails beneath it. How the metal-induced spell of speed worked, Cianne didn't know. None of her personal studies in smelting came close to such a feat, which had only been built a few years back. She remembered glimpsing an article on it in the local paper, back when she'd still been a student at Tagus Prath. Unease began to creep into Cianne's resolve when the train met its destination, blowing out smoke and steam as the engine relaxed onto its rails for a night's rest. She imagined it to be near midnight, and despite the glow of more magicked lamps in the Reading train station, Cianne couldn't help but focus on the dark spots in between them and beyond. She slipped her right hand into her bag as she walked, touching both folded and unfolded papers, fingering the handle of her pistol. Emery would be furious. Fortunately, Reading, like London, boasted a big enough population that most streets glowed with lamplight, all enchanted. In fact, Cianne couldn't find a single ordinary lamp. She supposed that was due to Reading being the host city of Magicians English Enterprising, the largest material magics engineering firm in all of Great Britain. It was the same company responsible for whatever hovering spell was boosting the railway's efficiency. They had given an address at Tagus Prath the week before Cianne's graduation, though it had turned into more of a hunt for future employees. As far as Cianne knew, the company didn't employ folders. The whistle of another train sounded through the illuminated city as Cianne strode down Broad Street, albeit this one from another direction. At least three railways converged on Reading. Only one could take her back to London, however. Several people milled about despite the late hour. Two businessmen absorbed in conversation, a scandalously dressed woman smoking a fag, three men exiting a different car on the train Cianne had taken, laughing hard enough to cry. Cianne left them all behind. Stopping near a statue with the name George Palmer engraved on it, Cyane pulled 3 songbirds from her purse and commanded them, "Breathe." She whispered secrets to the birds, telling them how to detect excision magic and find the elusive Saraj Prendi, and then released them into the air. Staying on the lit streets, albeit out of the way, Cyane meandered by a noisy inn and peeked through a window unshielded by curtains, scanning the faces within, listening to the music a young balding man banged on a piano in the corner. She wished she had more to go on, but also hoped she wouldn't find anything substantial. She'd considered bringing the paper bird that had alerted her of Redding, but the creature was so damaged it had ceased to hold its animation. Stifling a yawn with the back of her hand, Cyane continued onward, taking one road and then another, avoiding dark alleys, using a folded telescope to peer down lanes. She found no mirrors or bits of reflective glass to cast upon, and eventually crossed the street to avoid a laughing, inebriated couple who stumbled over the pavement. Eventually, Cyane followed a line of blue-lit lanterns toward the bank of the River Kennet, which wound down from the River Thames and sliced through the south side of Reading. She kept clear of the docks, wanting to keep a safe distance from the water at all times. She still hadn't learned how to swim, though Emery had mentioned wanting to teach her. Modesty, of course, was an issue, as was her unabated fear of drowning. The flapping of paper reached her ears, and Cyane looked up to see one of her songbirds, folded from black paper, descending to her. It hovered at eye level for a moment before backflipping in the air.
"You found something?" Cyane asked, voice low. How she wished these animated spells could talk. "Show me."
The bird flew over Cyane's shoulder and down a bend in the next street, winding closer to the river. Clasping the pistol inside her bag, Cyane hurried after it, not quite running. The dark spell disappeared between street lamps, blending in with the night sky, but it didn't fly too fast for Cyane to keep track of it. It took her past a 4-story building rowed with windows, a Victorian-esque structure waving a flag from its chimney, and a dark building that looked like a cross between a schoolhouse and a barn. A sign near its door read, "Simon's Brewery." Only one of its windows, on the 3rd floor, was dimly lit. Canals branching from River Kennet looped through this part of Reading. Cyane grit her teeth as she hurried over a short bridge crossing the still water. Here, the enchanted lamps, shorter than those in the other part of town, had pyre-made flames that changed from lime to fuchsia, perhaps to draw attention to the waterline. Their reflections off the canal surface looked like lily pads, but Cyane tried not to stare at the water too closely. She had more critical things to fear at the moment. The black songbird landed on a sign that read, "Kennet and Avon Canal, authorized vehicles only." Cyane reached it, huffing to catch her breath. The little bird flew down into her hands, where she commanded it, "Cease," and tucked it into her bag. She searched the area, noting a bench by the canal, as well as a drooping tree that had seen better days. Another bridge led to a dock behind her. On the water, she saw a small boat, little more than a canoe, carrying 2 people. One rowed, the other smoked a cigar. A lantern sat between them, casting a mustardy glow off their faces. The man with the cigar had an old face with a prominent nose and loose skin. The man rowing wore long, loose sleeves and had a dark complexion. Cyane's breath caught in her throat, and a shiver ran down her spine. She stepped to the left to put the tree between herself and the boat, which steadily drew farther and farther from her. Saraj? Could that man be Saraj? She thought so, but she had never gotten a clear look at the man in the light of day, only glimpses here and there. What was he doing? Where was he going, and who was helping him? What exactly did Cyane plan to do? She had the upper hand of having found him first. But the water. She swallowed. Her compact mirror was in her purse. She could use it to contact Magician Avioski or Magician Hughes, alert them of what she'd seen. Perhaps they would believe she'd come across a gaffer who'd agreed to help her with the spell. She'd have to explain herself. Word would reach Emery. Surely Magician Avioski wouldn't suspend her at the very end of her apprenticeship. But so what if she were suspended? Wouldn't getting Saraj's neck in the hangman's noose be worth it? The well-being of her family was more important than any magician's certificate. She released her pistol and fumbled through her bag for the mirror, glancing up to spy again at the distancing boat.
You're like a kitten.
The honey-slick voice pricked at the back of Sienna's neck like cold needles, making her jump. She whirled around to see a tall, thin silhouette of a man standing at the edge of the bridge to the port. Her hand snapped back to the pistol. Excuse me. The man moved forward until the light of the nearest flashing lamp cast its green and purple light on him, glinting off the gold studs in his ears. An Indian man, who stood a little too slender, matted curls jutting out from either side of his almost triangular head. He wore tattered clothes that needed washing. The clothing of a man on the run.
A kitten, his accented words repeated. Who wanders around and follows those who offer her milk. But I have no milk, kitten.
An icy tremor coursed down Sienna's back. Saraj Prendi took one step closer.
So tell me, Sienna Maya Twill, why have I found you wandering the city so late at night?
He grinned a truly canine smile.